Download the new 98.5 The Sports Hub app today.
Highly underrated piece of meat.
Listen live.
I don't buy this for a second.
Podcasts, tweets, and more.
Love it.
Available in the App Store and Google Play.
It's the joy of the hot dog.
It's T&R. T&R on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Toucher and Rich.
Okay, keep doing it.
The Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. If you've listened to the show at all, you know that Rich's wife, Mary, is a cancer survivor. How many relapses?
Three times. And she ended up getting a stem cell transplant from her sister. So it took a lot of shots and a lot of experimental drugs and a lot of fingers crossed and a lot of great doctors. But knock on wood, for 4 years now, she's been cancer-free. So that was the last relapse, was back then. During that time, you know, for anyone who knows anybody who's had cancer or any kind of like leukemia or a sickness of the a blood type of cancer, it's not an easy road back to trying to get back to where you were. It's a years and years of visiting the hospital, constantly checking, making sure your numbers are good, making sure that your muscles are healing back, because they kind of atrophy for a while if you spend a lot of time in the hospital. On top of that, when you get a transplant, your body doesn't quite recognize the new blood that's in there. So there's all of the graft versus host stuff that goes on. So it's a long road. And about 7 months ago, she went to the doctors and they gave her a bill of health that said, we don't need to see you here for several months, which is the first time. I mean, she used to go at least, her best was once a month, and they said, we don't need to see you for 6 months. And at that point, she said, you know what, I think I want to run the marathon. And the main reason was because when she got sick, the main thing that we all wanted to hear was success stories, people who had gotten to the other side and had been healed, who were going through what she was going through. And she said maybe if she ran the marathon, if there was anybody else who got leukemia or cancer or what she had, that they could look and say, hey, 5 years later, not only is this person healthier, but they're doing something they've never done before and they've run. It was very bold. It was kind of cool that she did that. When she first told me she was going to run it, she'd never run before, and I was a little hesitant, and she talked to her doctors, and they said, if you train properly, great, you could do it. So the day after she announced it and started raising money for Dana-Farber, she broke her toe. It wasn't anything that she needed to be doing. She went ass over tea kettle on a scooter, went through my kids, which was probably not the best thing. So that meant she was out of training for a month. And then after that, because she has a compromised immune system because of the drug she takes for her transplant, she got a case of the shingles, which knocked her out of training for a month and a half. And then after that, she ended up getting the flu. So she's literally only been training for 6 weeks. 6 weeks for this marathon. But things were working out well, and she ended up raising almost $34,000 before the race yesterday, thanks to many of our listeners, and she was ready to go. She had run, like, I think 14 miles was her last long run, which I've heard is okay. So yesterday, as we all know, it was just miserable. The rain was awful. And about 3 weeks ago, her doctor said, you know, the one thing that we're concerned about, we think you're healthy enough to run, but if it rains, we might have to have a discussion. And so Mary was like, don't worry, I'm not going to run if it rains. Okay, great. So a week ago, we look at the forecast and we see that it is almost a certainty that it was going to rain. So she called the doctor, talked to her doctor, saw her on Wednesday, and they said to her, just be responsible. If you're going to run, just make sure that if you do run in the rain, there's several things to look out for. And if that happens, don't be a hero. You need to stop. And the top of the list was shivering, like nonstop shivering or chattering. And if you can't stop that, her body doesn't have enough to fight that. So yesterday started. She started off at 11 o'clock, around 12:30. John, I met you over in Natick, yep. And John was awesome. John and his wife were out there, and they're helping out our kids as Mary and her friend came running by, and we, you know, gave her new socks. And everyone, John was exactly right. This was not one of those races where people would dress up in, like, wacky costumes and, like, say, hey, we're running the marathon for charity. This was a, I can't wait to get this over with, business-like. John said only about a quarter of the people that usually show up to cheer the runners on were there.
Yeah.
By the way, everyone who like was there to cheer on the runners, A, you're a maniac. B, you're the greatest humans on the planet. To do that was unbelievable. First of all, that you kind of need that if you're running 26 miles, someone to cheer you on. And the fact that people showed up and stood in the rain to do that, my God, I mean, it's that whole restoring faith in humanity, that was it. So she got some fresh socks and ended up running. And so I was going to meet her over by Heartbreak Hill at that point. So I went running, driving down the road. And then about 4 o'clock, I get a phone call from Mary. And she's sobbing, but I can also hear her voice shaking. And I said, what's wrong? She goes, I'm in a Dunkin' Donuts in Wellesley, and I can't stop shaking. She goes, I can't stop shaking. I'm so cold, and it's gotten to my chest now, and I know this isn't good, and I want to finish this. And she just started crying. And I said, I'll be there in a couple minutes. So I went from where Heartbreak Hill was, where I was waiting for, and I drove over to Wellesley. And when I got to the Dunkin' Donuts, you know, she was a mess. She was devastated that she couldn't finish. She'd imagined in her head the entire time that she was going to be able to do this. And she was thinking about all the people. She was upset that she was going to let all the people down that she raised money for. And I was like, listen, the first person you got to listen to are your doctors. You know, you're not helping anybody. You don't want to look back on this and get sick and realize I shouldn't have done this. And now I'm back in the hospital for several weeks. And then, you know, you miss out. It's you got to take care of your health. And she stood there in that Dunkin' Donuts and for like 10 minutes just broke down. And so finally, she came to a decision. And that was, let's get you home. Let's wait till the rain stopped. I looked at the weather forecast, and it looked like it was going to be heavy rain for like another 4 hours. It's like 3 to 4 hours. At this point, it was about 4:30. And I said, let's get you home. Let's get you in dry clothes. As soon as the rain stops, let's take an Uber back here and let's run the rest of it. And I'll do it with you because it's going to be dark. No one's going to be on the road and I'll do it. Now at that point she was at 15 and a half miles. She had 10.7 left to go. I've never run more than 7 miles in my life. I did the Falmouth one time and it killed me. So I wasn't ready for this either. So, Mary said, I think that's what I want to do. So she turned off her phone because all of her friends, you know, wanted to know when she was finishing, and it was tough. It's like tough to have to tell them that you got to stop. So she went home. We cleaned her up. We got dry clothes on. And at 8 o'clock, we went back to the Wellesley Dunkin' Donuts. And I just tweeted something and put something on my Facebook, essentially for the people who had donated, because you can track her. And at 15 miles, it just stopped. So didn't want people to be worried. And on top of that, it was like for family who might have been trying to figure out where she was. So I posted this thing. A note that essentially said that we were gonna run the last 10.7 miles together and finish. So I put that up, and we went running. And it's weird too, because at that point I didn't even know like where the course was going. That's all residential neighborhoods that you're mm-hmm. going through. So you know what you did? You followed the orange peels and the smashed cups along the way. And every once in a while you'd see a lone porta potty, and you'd be like, "All right, we're going the right way." And I also had like an app that every once in a while would open that would help, you know, show which direction we were going. And we almost took a wrong turn a couple times, but it was weird. And then all of a sudden, we got to Heartbreak Hill, and I took a picture of Heartbreak Hill. And within the next couple minutes, a car would pull up, and it would be strange because in the middle of the night, and like nobody's on the road, and this car would pull up. And as you rode up, someone would come out and go, "Woo, go Mary!" And then they get back in the car and they would take off. Like, oh, that's strange. And then we went another like half mile. And then there would be like a truck pulled up. It was a WBZ truck. And this cameraman just came out and started following Mary. I'm like, well, this is kind of odd. And started filming us as we were running. Now, granted, we didn't run the entire way because, once again, she had been doing it all day. And I have never run that before. So it was probably about like 65-70% running and 30% panting and wanting to die. So as we kept going down the road, another guy would pull over, and one guy was cranking Dave Gosher's play-by-play of the race walker who crapped himself and went, "Go Mary!" and did that, and he pulled off. And then we got towards Boston College, and all of a sudden, more people were pulling over and cheering her on. And so we knew that a couple of people had seen it on either Instagram or Twitter. And the last couple of miles were tough for her. I mean, she had to walk most of it. Like right around Coolidge Corner was when just her knees started giving out, and she ended up pushing through for the last mile. Right as soon as we hit the sign at Kenmore, the Citgo sign, she goes, "I want to run the end of this." So we started running, and at this point, it's about midnight. Now, once again, we haven't been checking our phones that much except to pull up this app that had the race course on it. But once we hit, like, Cleveland Circle, we knew what the course was. So we get over to, we're about to take a left on Boylston. And once again, like, no one's out. It's like 12:15. A couple people are hanging outside the bar, but we see that the lights are on down by the finish line. And I'm like, "Mary, there's no one on the streets. We got to run in the street. I want you to do this the way that you've always wanted to do it. We're going to run in the street, and we're going to, you know, dodge traffic if we need to. Please, no one pick us off." So we start running, and right about when we hit Abe and Louie's, you can't see what's at the finish line because the lights are so big, but I do see that there's several police cars with their lights on who are directing traffic down Ring Road, so no one will drive over the finish line. And we hear this roar of people down there, which none of us had any idea was going to happen. None. And as we run up there, the police have blocked it off. Apparently no one had run across the finish line for hours, but they were waiting for Mary because they saw it on our Instagram or on our Twitter. And we get closer to the finish line, and there are strangers. There's like five news cameras. There was Dan Roach standing there all smiling. He's been there all day. There were friends that we hadn't seen in forever. And as we pulled up, they all started cheering, and Mary hit the line. And I hope none of you watched the video, because you're going to see me in a very demasculated state. I know you guys are probably to give me massive amounts of crap, but I lost it. Mary did as well. And, Dan Roach did this kind of crazy thing where he's just like, you know, he's been announcing people all day, and he goes, "Now officially, ladies and gentlemen, Mary Shirtley, with a time of, I think it was like 12 hours or whatever long it was, has finished the Boston Marathon." And the crowd cheered her on, and that was that. So she got to finish it despite all of the crap that everyone had to go through yesterday. And when I saw how people were able to run through that and were able to finish it, I don't know how you can power through something like that and just not feel like you did something massive. I couldn't. At one point, Mary couldn't see 5 feet in front of her during that rain, and for her to rally and say I'm going to go back was inspiring to me. My ass feels like it's on fire, my muscles, because I've never run that much in my life. But Mary, she did it, and thanks to all the listeners, I'm kind of getting choked up now. But thanks to all the listeners, she ended up raising about close to $35,000 for Dana-Farber doing all that. So I couldn't be prouder of my wife. I love my wife. I'm so happy for her. And thank you for everyone along the way who stopped and cheered her on and offered power bars and Gatorade and water at 11:15 and at night. You were there. Every once in a while, someone would drive by and say, "Go Mary." And I would say, "What's the Bruins score?" And they'd say, "You don't want to know." And then they would drive off. That would be it. So thanks to everyone who came out and supported my wife. And donated. It was a special moment I'll never forget, and I'll never forget everyone who helped us out and wished us goodwill along the way. So, and congratulations to my wife, if she's listening right now. I love you.
I want to see you crying on the video. they're showing it, but they're focusing on Mary.
Good.
Someone's
doing me a solid.
There's no video of you crying.
Oh, Dan just said who gave her the medal. You don't get a medal for finishing last. That was the other thing too. Is that that was a friend of hers who had run it. brought her medal and gave it to her for her to wear at the finish line.
Why don't you get a medal for finishing last?
You don't. I mean, I don't know. So she didn't get a medal, but that's perfectly fine. But I will say this is that Mary did ask Dan, she goes, am I officially the last person to cross the finish line in this marathon? He said, yes. And I'm like, badge of honor, baby. That was like that article we read where people actually try to do that.
Yeah.
So, and you know what was great? The minute it was done, and the minute all the people stopped talking to her and interviewing her, they literally, all the workers who were there were like cheering her on. These guys who had been there all day turned around and started breaking it down. They were all waiting for Mary. The police officers, volunteers, there were people in the orange jackets, the volunteers were there. People from the medical tent had come up. And all of the guys who were just there that night to break everything down all came around the finish line to cheer her on. I did not expect that, and for that to happen, it was. I'm glad they didn't interview me because I don't know if I would have been able to talk. But thank you for everyone who did that. That was awesome.
If anyone has a video of him crying, please
don't send it to anyone.
Immediately send that.
delete.
And that is what we demand to see. Well, that's good stuff. That is good stuff. All right, so we're going to talk to Phil Perry.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
98.5 Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich, Phil Perry, is from NBC Sports Boston. He, of course, covers the Patriots, and he joins us. Hello, Mr. Phil Perry.
Good morning, fellas. Before we get going, I have to say, absolutely awesome to track what Mary did last night. Was rooting her on from our office and then from my couch when I got home. Just the epitome of toughness. So congratulations to her. Congratulations to all the runners. Just ridiculous what they do annually running that race, period. But to do it in the conditions they did it yesterday, mind-boggling. So, congratulations to everybody.
Thank you, Phil, on behalf of my wife. But I will say that it made for one hell of an ending because the two winners are the weirdest people ever. Like, one guy, like, the guy who won the men's one doesn't even run for a living. He's, like, got a full-time job in Japan, and he won by, like, 2 minutes. And then the woman's one, like, won by, what, 4 minutes? So I think all the rules were out the window yesterday, Phil. I think it was just basically survive in advance.
You had to grind. Yesterday was a grinder's day, a real grinder's day.
Yes, it was.
All right, Phil, so we found out that Tom Brady is going to miss at least a portion of this optional training, and he's going to spend the time with his family in Guerrero. I know there's three other times that he's done this. Does this one seem different to you?
Yeah, I think we have to find some kind of balance here because on the one hand, what he's missing is the strength and conditioning portion of OTAs. And Tom Brady is somebody who clearly is on a different program from the rest of the team when it comes to strength and conditioning. And so for him to miss this isn't the biggest deal in that regard. But I do think this is an off season unlike really any other in terms of where Brady's at this stage of his career and his openness in terms of, questioning his conviction, as we saw at the end of the Tom versus Tom series. So for this to happen after that, after we had a little bit of a window into his soul in that regard, I think is significant. So on the one hand, I don't think it's time to, really hit the panic meter. Like, are we worried that he's ever coming back? I'm not at that stage yet, but I would say we do have to lend some significance to this because of where this entire offseason has gone.
All right, earlier in the show we were talking about, Guerrero is obviously a huge problem. Everyone knows that, and not problem, but yeah, problem. I mean, it's a problem.
Well, source of friction.
And
a problem as a result for the franchise.
Right, and so, in Brady's working out with Guerrero instead of working out with the team, in your opinion, what's the move? Does Kraft step in and get involved? Does he force Belichick and Brady to meet? How do you think this gets handled internally?
It's such a good question because I don't know what the end game is. If you're Brady and you're looking at this and saying, I'm really going to kick back. I want to spend extra time with my family. What would make you feel better about this situation? What brings you back? Is it just the mandatory aspects of the off season? Is it just mini camp, those 3 days where everybody has to be there? Is that all he's going to do? That would be a break from the norm for him. You know, is he going to do that and just, you know, and then show up for the first day of training camp? He's going to want time off in training camp? Like, what changes things for Tom Brady? Is it bringing back Alex Guerrero? It's not money, I don't think. You know, I think his situation is probably different from Rob Gronkowski as far as that is concerned. But I also don't see Guerrero being necessarily welcomed back into the building and having those privileges reestablished, just because I don't know if Bill Belichick wants to go there with this situation. So it's a really tough question, because I don't know what the end game is. I don't know how this gets resolved. I know we talked about for months, well, they just need to have the conversation, quote unquote, the conversation, and make sure that everybody's on the same page, and that will make everything better. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because yes, it's a Guerrero thing, and I think that's a significant percentage of it. But I also think that this is, it's an atmosphere and a culture kind of issue too, where it's a really hard place to play. We all know that. Many players have articulated that, but I think for somebody like Brady, who's been there for almost two decades and is into his 40s now and has done everything he's done for the team, I think that culture, it seems like, has started to wear on him a little bit, and I don't know how you change that, especially when that culture is one of the reasons you've had so much success for the last two decades if you're Bill Belichick. So it seems as though they're at loggerheads here.
Would you ever see Bill Belichick conceding and saying, all right, we can have Guerrero back. We can have him back in the locker room. We can have him back on the sidelines. Is that something you would ever see him doing?
I don't, but I would say this about Belichick is, you know, I think for as rigid as he seems, and as he is in a lot of ways, he's also, you know, I don't know if he's given enough credit for being pretty adaptive in terms of the way he coaches his team, the programs that he installs to help get his team better, in his view. You know, he is in many ways old school, but in many ways he's on the cutting edge and willing to try things that a lot of teams and coaches I don't think would, because they're stuck in their ways. If he really feels like it's a dire situation and that, you know, he might not have his quarterback if this guy isn't allowed to have some of the privileges that he's had in the past, maybe he would be willing to bend a little bit. But initially, my gut feeling would be no.
It almost feels like at that point, if he did that, he would believe that he lost control of the locker room. And that would be, you can publicly, I don't want to say bitch and moan, but you can publicly angle against Bill Belichick and win. It almost seems like that's the main reason he would not want to give up that power.
I think that's a huge part of it. And, you know, you look at just the situation on the roster at that position. I mean, even though Jimmy Garoppolo only played six quarters, you know, what kind of benefit did they get just by having him there?
Yeah.
In terms of this whole situation with Tom Brady?
That's a great point.
How many things did Brady show up to in the offseason just because Jimmy Garoppolo was nipping at his heels? And so, I mean, I'm interested to see what happens in the draft here in a couple of weeks. Do they end up taking a quarterback in the first round? Does that at all impact Brady's decisions on when he wants to show up and how much he wants to do? Would the Patriots do something like that in order to, you know, in part, give Brady a kick in the pants? I think they have to draft a quarterback just to prepare their team for the future, but is that a side benefit that they would get from doing something like that? These are all little storylines that are going to play out pretty soon here.
Yeah, he doesn't skip that. He doesn't skip OTAs, I don't think.
If Garoppolo's here, no. I think it's a completely different ballgame.
All right, Solder and Amendola, you know, talked about the franchise and how it was called. Amendola said a little bit more than Solder did. Does this mean anything to you that players now are coming out and sort of feel the free to diss the organization a little bit?
You know, it really doesn't, because we've heard from guys that are on the roster, and while they're on the roster, say things to this effect. I mean, Dante Hightower is a great one for talking about just how difficult it is to play here. And, you know, he's called it hell before. That's a quote from him. It's really, really tough. But like Amendola and like Solder, Hightower will go out of his way to say, you know, the reason it's tough is because it makes us better. And it's Bill trying to establish something that's going to help us win football games. And so that's part of the deal. Everybody knows it. We've heard about it for a long, long time now. It is a little bit different. You know, obviously in Amendola's case, it was a little bit more graphic than some of, you know, just with the language. Like, I think that maybe makes it stand out in people's minds a little bit more. I think that got a few more headlines because of the wording that he used. But this really isn't that new to me. This has been happening for a long time where guys have come out and describe what it's like to be in New England, and it's not great. Unless you're winning. And if you're winning and you love football, then it's the best place in the world to play. That's something that Mayo has said often as well, is that, yeah, it's really difficult. And there are a lot of guys who come in and they've played other places and they've had great careers. And they come in and they say, you know, to those of us that have been around, hey, you know, why hasn't Bill told me that I've done a good job at anything? We've had a couple practices here and I haven't really heard from him, you know, on anything like that. I haven't gotten any kind of compliment, any kind of attaboys, any kind of pat on the ass. And that's just not the place that New England is. If you want that sort of stuff, you got to go somewhere else. This is going to be a tough place to play. But the benefit is that you might have a chance to win a few more games than you might other places.
All right, Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston, appreciate the time.
Okay, boys, thanks a lot.
All right, so we will be back. 617-779-0985. Thoughts about the Bruins yesterday. Here are the headlines.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Last night, the Patriots fall. Or the Patriots. The Bruins fall 4-2 to Toronto. We were talking about it earlier in the show. I mean, this is a game that the Bruins could have won. Pasternak hit two posts, and then there was probably the save of the playoffs. Anderson, paddle save, diving to the side. Then there was Krejci. Well, Anderson, I don't know what's up with Anderson. And Anderson's laying on his stomach.
He's flopping around like a fish out of water. Yeah. He got lucky more than once.
But he's on his stomach, and Krejci, they might have called that back because of goaltender interference, but Krejci lifts the puck, and Anderson's able to wildly swing his glove up and block it. Krejci, with open net, whiffs on a puck. So a lot of scoring opportunities. I contend that even in game one, there was a longer stretch where the Bruins looked like they didn't have it together.
How about the ball started rolling for the Toronto Maple Leafs because of a bogus call by the refs? I mean, that delay of game, we all saw that it hit the glass, except for, as you were saying, and I did not hear this on NBC Sports, they were saying that the refs apparently couldn't see the puck because there were so many blue jerseys in the crowd. Is that right?
They were
Which
saying,
makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, they were saying that there's so many blue jerseys that it's impossible to see. And Cassidy, while they were talking to him on the bench, said, look, people were going to get calls wrong, but the officials conferred with each other. There's five of them.
Right.
Sitting there talking to each other, and they can't figure out that hit the glass.
Here's Cassidy, by the way, about that call.
It bothers you, but you got to move on. It's early in the game. They capitalized. Doesn't mean just because they call you disagree with a call that it's going to result in a goal. So they made a good play. They got on top of the crease. They earned it. They earned their ice. You know, we weren't able to react quick enough and move them out of theirs, and he's done that all year for them.
But it's true what you said. Offensively, don't change a thing. Everyone had their chances. You're not going to have that first line get shut down again. On top of that, are you going to see Anderson play that well again? I mean, he played out of his mind.
First line didn't get shut down last night. They had more than their fair share of opportunities. This time, the puck didn't go in the net.
They got shut out.
Shut out is different.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, right. They absolutely did. And some of those, I still don't know how they didn't go in. But, and the Pasternak save, as Fred said, was just absolutely ridiculous. The way he reached up and just paddled the thing out of the sky with a wide open net. That's not going to happen again.
Against this Toronto team, they've been exploited a couple times by sending Chara one time and Miller one time down to pinch. And then, I don't know, I know that's Cassidy's deal and it's worked a lot and that they've had success that you can make a defenseman be part of the play. Chara did it yesterday and scored a goal. By the way, both goals Anderson let in were bad. I mean, the McQuaid one was just insane. I don't even know if anyone was in front of the net.
I still think that angle Chara shot it for him was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a, nice that Chara lifted the puck and got it in.
Yeah.
But Anderson, I mean, all you have to do is put your body yep. against the post.
Right,
I mean, there's not much that you have to do there.
And then the old dribbler.
But with the speed of this Toronto team, don't you think I wouldn't be as aggressive with my defensemen, especially a Miller or a Chara. It just because like you were saying earlier, the long passes, the speed stretch. Of Toronto, the yeah. stretch passes with that speed of Toronto. Because yesterday, Crew got burned, and I think it was the last game you had, or the first game, Krejci got burned.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's part of. I mean, that was the thing with a run up to this series. This is what Toronto wants to do. And still, the Bruins got beat a handful of times last night. That's not going to happen again Thursday. Cassidy will figure out a way to shut that down. So what are you left with if you're Toronto? If you're unable to hit on these long passes and you have to work the puck up the ice, your speed is taken out of it. I think this is the Bruins lead 2-1, but they're clearly the better team.
Yes.
Clearly the better team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You can't blame Rask for what happened last night.
Nope.
That's the thing is that there's the only thing that Toronto has on them is Toronto has a very, very good power play, and Toronto has superior team speed.
And their penalty kill, by the way, Toronto's penalty kill has been atrocious.
Oh, it's been awful.
In this series. And the fact that the Bruins didn't score a power play goal last night doesn't take away from that. Bruins should have scored a power play goal last night.
Bruins should have scored a couple power play goals last night.
Well, I think nothing that we say can say it better than David Pastrnak did afterwards.
Yeah, you know, it's life. You see that it happens in your life as well, you know. One day you have a great day, next morning you wake up and it's absolutely shit day, so it happens, you know. How I said, I'm going to come in tomorrow, and just like I did, I forgot about those 2 games, you know. We forget about this tonight and get better for next game.
Was he rocking the zoot suit again? I did not get to see that,
see
whether
it.
Or not.
I didn't see it either. I don't know if that's just... but he came to the rink in the zoot suit. If you didn't see it... he had on Pastrnak in game 2 had on a plaid basically suit whatever, but then he rocked this like giant Greg Norman hat.
Yeah,
and he wore it to the game, so even if they would have gotten crushed, he would have had to go up there with his Greg Norman suit on.
I want him to go full barbershop quartet.
Well, there he looks. I'm looking at the video. There he looks Amish.
Yeah, it's like
that's an Amish. Now it's coming into focus. No, he doesn't look Amish. It looked like a black suit before.
No. He looks like when Tom and Jerry, when Tom would get in the zoot suit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Either that, or when he was going to go out with like the scarecrow.
Yeah. Come on, he was a cool cat.
That's right. Snap the finger.
Or he's Jim Carrey in the mask. That's a good one. Dan said good. That.
There's nothing more disturbing than in a Bugs Bunny when Bugs Bunny would make the scarecrow and put lipstick on it, and then immediately Foghorn Leghorn would want to have sex with it.
Hmm.
I don't even remember that at all.
No, not Foghorn Leghorn. Yosemite Sam.
Oh, okay. No, maybe I do remember that.
Yeah.
Foghorn Leghorn is more sensible.
Foghorn Leghorn. Yeah, that's right. All right. John, go ahead. John, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Hey.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, John?
All right. I'm calling this morning because, you know, even if the Bruins had won last night, that would not be the greatest sports story in Boston today. I think what Mary accomplished is the greatest sports story that I've ever heard. And you know, last place is first place in reverse. And for her to leave there and come back and finish the marathon, I have more respect for her than all the elite runners combined. I as a young man, I ran a marathon in Japan. And I trained 6 months for this marathon, and it was one of the biggest ones there. And I didn't finish it. I dropped out in less than 15 miles. I was a Marine. I was in the greatest shape of my life, and I could not finish it. You know, and they need to change the whole line about the agony of defeat. It's the agony of victory that she overcome, and it's just an amazing story.
Well, thank you, John. That's awesome. I do know that, however, all the people who were running and went through that garbage, it was, you read what happened with the medical tents yesterday. I guess they're saying almost 3,000 people had to go to the hospital because of that. And you had elite runners who are dropping out. Fred, I was when I went to go drive from where I saw her when I was with Wallach over in Natick, and I went over to where Heartbreak Hill was, there was a point where I couldn't see 5 feet in front of me. The rain was coming down so hard. And I turned to Mary's mom, and I'm like, no one should be running in this. Just imagine just standing in that for 5 to 6 hours. It would be horrible for your health. So everyone who ended up running through that, it's absolutely insane.
Well, you should be proud. Mary has the greatest sports story of all time.
Better than the Miracle on Ice. It was 28-3. It was 28-3.
It was Owens in the Olympics with the Nazis in the crowd.
Hey, to me, it was there. It was better than Rocky defeating communism on his own in Rocky IV.
Well. Hey, then there's...
If I could change.
Yeah, let's not start insulting America, okay? All right, we'll be right back.
John, I know you're having a hard time this morning, so this music bed is just for you.
The sports up with Toucher and Rich. It's a very hard, dark day for John Wallach. It's the guy from Night Court died.
Harry Anderson. Of course, Wallach doing his clarinet. Kurt Eppert.
Wait for it. Here it is. Now, is Robert Mull dead?
Bull,
right?
Marsha Warfield is not dead because she actually tweeted out something, and everyone retweeted it yesterday about Harry Anderson.
Well, the original African American woman that was on the show is dead.
I don't remember the original.
Yeah,
I thought she replaced the bailiff that Marsha Warfield replaced.
Yes,
she was an old woman.
Okay, well then someone's dead. So, wait a second. So
okay, Larroquette's alive, because he was on that Me, Myself, right. and I show.
Yes. Marky Post is alive.
She tweeted last night. I saw that.
Richard Mull, I'm going to guess dead.
I'm guessing dead, too.
I say we save it and play Dead or Alive.
How do you stay out of the spotlight if you're Richard Mull? I mean, he's quite a presence, yeah. And he was quite a star, too. He was in the movie House.
All right.
With William Catt.
All right, Harry Anderson, dead.
Yeah, he died.
John Larroquette alive. Richard Mull, let's see if he is alive.
Alive. Dan says he is. 75 years old.
He's alive.
He is alive. All right. Marky Post is alive. We're saying Marsha Warfield is alive.
She tweeted yesterday, unless it's her ghost.
It might be like a dummy account.
Well, I mean, there's been people who have died before who their account is run by like the estate or the family, and they'll tweet something, so I could be wrong about that. But I do know, however, that Harry Anderson, he was like a magician. That was his big thing, right? He was like the
Saturday Night Live judge. Originally. He did guest spots on Saturday Night Live doing magic.
He was that Magic Castle or whatever in L.A. You got to start. Yeah, the early 80s when Saturday Night Live was terrible.
Did I read that Scorsese is doing a movie or for Netflix something about SCTV?
Yes. Is doing a documentary on SCTV.
Oh, okay, so it's a documentary. It's not like a movie kind of like Wired where they're using actors.
No, I believe it's a documentary, and John Candy couldn't make it. Okay, he's dead.
John Candy's, he's
dead.
But they're definitely going to get the guy who said Jackass from Happy Gilmore, whatever his name was.
Oh, yeah, Flannery.
Yeah, Flannery. That's right, he'll be there. Stuart Pankin is doing insole shoe commercials.